Okay, welcome everyone. Welcome to my existing students and any new guests and visitors. So tonight I'm going to present a talk about data lakes and how they're maturing into data hubs, and also I'll touch on the concept of what it means to be semantic. So as you can see there, my name is Renato Iannella. I've been an adjunct or visiting professor here at the University of Hong Kong for the past 21 years, since the ICOM Econ program began. And my current role back in Australia is as a lead data architect at Air Services Australia. Air Services Australia is a bit like your civil aviation department here in Hong Kong. So we manage air traffic control for the Australian region, which includes half of the Indian Pacific Ocean and quite a large area. So it's a semi-government organisation. We manage a lot of data from different stakeholders, airlines in particular, managing flights and making sure that flights are safe when you land them in your neighbouring airports. So that's my current role. Some of the talk I'll be, some of the use cases I'll be talking about today actually come from my previous role, which was with the health department in Australia. So you see a few examples that come out of the healthcare realm as well. But in essence, both of those are feeding into the topic of tonight's talk, which is about data lakes and how they become more semantic. So what I'm going to cover is what data lakes are and how we can enable the maturity for those capabilities. I'll touch on what a data hub is and look at some of the industry directions and trends as well. And then, of course, I'll end up with what it means to be a semantic data lake or data hub and what's the implications of that. Okay, so a few years ago, I suppose there was the term data lake, of course, never existed, but then through the usual marketing realm of the IT industry, the concept of having a lake, which is basically a big pool of resources that you put all your data into, and then you can go off and then sort of go into that lake and find the stuff of interest, is the concept behind a data lake. So different industry sectors typically have these large data ecosystems where there's lots of data from all different repositories. You go into any large sector, any large organization, particularly in government, and there could be hundreds if not thousands of repositories of data, all individually maintained, collecting significant amounts of data for their own particular operational purpose, but they don't really share that very well outside their remit or their operational boundaries. So what data lake was about was saying, okay, let's put all that data into one large repository and then be able to see what potential we can get out of that big collection of data. So the driving sort of force behind it, if you like, was to enable a data analytics so that you can actually have a single repository that you access, and then you can plug into your favourite data analytics tools to get predictive and all sorts of different types of analytic styles. But of course, the thing about data lakes is that depending on how the original data that was collected back up here was governed, it also impacted how you would actually get data out of the lake. So there were some sort of misconceptions that everything that went into the lake could be taken out, but in many scenarios it wasn't the case. And particularly, for example, in healthcare, you couldn't assume that what was put into the lake was accessible by every single person because of the issues to do with privacy, for example, for patient records. Here's an example of the different types of ecosystem that health has itself, and it covers, from the research environment, public health, R&D, government, policy, technology, behaviour. So there's a huge amount of different stakeholders and requirements in that space. But in essence, when you think about what a data lake really is, it's quite straightforward. You have a whole heap of operational sources at one end here. You ingest them into one large data repository. And in many cases, that's in the cloud because you need the ability to have a scalable infrastructure. So basically what ends up in here is basically the raw sources from these operational data stores. So if they're SQL databases, you just dump everything into here and you have some sort of mechanism to keep it up to date, some sort of way to keep the changes in the operational system into the raw sources. Then the magic happens over here. Some sort of transformations occur. You look at all the data in here, say, okay, got this data, this data, this data. Let's transform parts of it and then come up with other sets of data sets that we may want to use, or small tables and rows in case of SQL. And then we'll have our little BI tools out here, and then we'll consume it from there. So that's the sort of the general framework for a data lake. And of course, in some cases, you might have a catalog of what's in here and what you've done over in this side over here in terms of the transformations. And basically the idea is, as a consumer, you can come along and see, look at the catalog and say, what have you got? Or how have you transformed the data? So then I can plug in my analytics tools at this end to do some analysis of the underlying data. So that's the sort of the straightforward framework. The problems that have arisen in that is that these transformations can become quite wieldy, because the problem is that to understand what's in here, because you've basically dumped 100 repositories into one big SQL table in most cases, to understand what these actually mean, all the rows and tables and whatever else are in here, is quite a complex scenario. So that when you try and then do these transformations, you have to sometimes guess as to what the meaning of the data is. So there is some issues about how the integrity of the data is actually represented after you do the transformations. So that's one of the biggest challenges to, for example, some things like healthcare, in that you don't want to make these transformations on data that you don't really understand, because you've just dumped it out of existing operational systems. And all the knowledge that was in these people's heads over here about how this data is actually maintained is actually lost when you go through this process, because all the governance over here doesn't get transferred across. Only thing it gets transferred across is actually just data, and nothing else but data gets transferred across. So there are some issues in that particular scenario. But in essence, if we look at that framework there, we look at what are the sort of the issues we want to look at from a data management point of view. There's five, six there that I've sort of picked on. Knowledge management, which is how do we know what's in the data catalog, the actual environment itself, the systems that we run for the lake, the governance over the access to the data lake. Because typically you don't let anyone access the data lake, because when you think about the access control on these operational systems, they're all specific to a group of particular people with particular roles. So when you move it across into here, that doesn't mean all those permissions are just gone out of the ether. So you still have to have some sort of governance as to who can get data out of your data lake. There's following standards at the top there, which I'll touch on a bit more. There's, of course, the way that analytics or business intelligence for the consumption side, as well as how we provide those to the consumers as well. So those are the sort of six areas that in some cases we look at how we can mature those capabilities to enable us to have a framework. So I'll look at a few of those now in a bit more. So that's the six there. So knowledge. So that's the capability for collective information about all our data across enterprises, the standards, which is how we align to and conform to our typically global or national data standards. Consumption is really about how we can share that information across the enterprise. Analytics is really how we get that ability to integrate and support common objectives for BI. Governance is how we control, protect, ensure the information across enterprises is safe and secure. And the environment is our capability for the actual platform itself and the services we provide. So typically what we look at, for example, these six areas. We can map it against a sort of a capability model. Where are we at the moment? Are we sort of level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? And try and work out if you want to get to higher levels in capability. So that's what you typically would then have in terms of creating a roadmap. So some of the other ones I'll look at very briefly, the standards side. So when it comes to standards or particular data standards I'm referring to here, that they give us a few extra pieces of capability. So that means we have a common view of data entities across the organisation. we have a view of common data models, we can have a view of different terminology and reference data, standard KPIs or key performance indicators, and of course identity as well. So the points under there are specifically for healthcare. So for example, here in healthcare we have a number of data model standards listed there, and that then itself becomes a bit of an issue about which data standards do you actually follow. Even more complex are the terminology. These are very complex sets of terminology sets. SNOMED, for example, has 1 million entries in it and growing. So trying to manage 1 million concepts is quite a challenge for any system to understand. The KPIs is interesting because in particularly healthcare, these groups in Australia, for example, and other similar groups around in different jurisdictions, they want healthcare to meet certain requirements. So they set KPIs. You have to have the following KPIs. So that's something that you need to achieve. And then identity is the other one, whether we have patient identifiers, and in many cases there are different types of ways to do that as well. So all of those are variables that can impact how the data originally come from those operational sources. You put all that data into a big data store, like a data lake, and then you have to deal with how to map across all of those different variables, if you like. Here's an example here of three different data model standards in healthcare, but this is an international standard, this is a national standard, and this is a state-based standard. All of them describe a patient or the subject of care, depending on how you view it. So, for example, they call it a subject of care here. They call it a participant over here. And over here, it's a person. So even the name of the thing is different. So, and there are three different standards there. And if you were a hospital in this jurisdiction here, you'd have to meet this requirement, this national requirement, and in many cases, this international requirement, particularly if you wanted to transfer data. So the concept of the data coming from different standards is quite complex to do all that mapping. So in terms of analytics, and particular for data lakes, over on this far side here is an example of one of the KPIs in healthcare. This is the standard number 7, and it's actually about blood and blood products. So obviously as a healthcare organisation and hospitals, etc., they have to manage their bloods, so in terms of stocks of their blood for transfusion, and where it's used, and sort of a whole heap of data analytics. You see in here, this is a typical data analytics dashboard that they want to see for every hospital to run, so they can measure and see where there are issues. So that's the output, if you like, of the data analytical process. Over on this side here, we can see here are all the repositories. These are single individual repositories or operational systems that contribute to these KPI standards. And you can see here where they marked off which ones need to get data from. So each of these has a little bit of data in it that helps you fill in some of these blanks, if you like, on this particular analytical dashboard. So what you do, of course, then is say, great, all this data over here, I'll throw all the data into a data lake, right, and I'll continue update them every hour. I'll get data from each of these Hibiscus, OzLab, the Viewer, BloodNet, Charm, you know, whatever else. They're all systems that are running as operational systems. And when I want to do my blood standards, I look along here and say, okay, which repositories do I need? Which data fields do I need? And then I can produce my particular report. So that sort of sounds okay, but you sort of look across here and say, well, okay, there's probably about a dozen different repositories I'm going to need to access, and hopefully things don't change at this level that makes me have to change any of these here. But then when you get down to the actual mapping, so when you started that transformation box I showed you before, that with the magical little cogs, this is what you end up with. So you have all these are all the sort of the, if you're familiar with the relational databases, here are the rows and tables from the different repositories. And here are the relationships you use to get the data out of the data lake. So all this stuff's been dumped in a data lake. And then you try and then come up with these different high level views up here and then transform them up higher and higher until you get to that KPI level. So you can see how trying to manage that in a repeatable, sustainable, scalable way will end up failing, because one of these lines gets out of sync with the repository. They change the SQL database over here, then everything will fall over. So that's probably one of the biggest challenges for a data lake, is that complexity of getting the data out into some sort of transformed view. Because you really have this lot of dependencies on what happens at this layer. So that's, I suppose, one of the biggest issues for data analytics. For data governance, as I mentioned, there's lots of different sort of governance capabilities in there, like, for example, glossaries, rules management, the semantics of models and dictionaries, the data catalogs I mentioned before. Data quality is another big one for data governance, trying to work out the accuracy and integrity of the data, and provenance. A whole heap of data governance requirements. And of course, as I mentioned, the biggest problem or issue from data lake's point of view is the data governance is lost in that transformation from the operational systems into the lake. And what you have to do is then look at all the governance policies you have on the operational systems and then try and work out, can I generalize those for the single data lake itself? And that's a quite a complex scenario, because it's not always going to give you a very simple outcome. There's a lot of sort of dependencies on the operational systems. But typically what happens is the model you follow is that you get everything in from the lakes. So all your data operational systems, you just dump it all into your data lake. So you sort of break down the barrier. So you say, okay, everything goes in. But as soon as you want to get something out of the data lake, that's when you have data governance saying, hang on, why do you want to get that data? What purposes are you going to use it for? So you have a bit of a more heavier-handed governance or access control, getting data out of the lake than getting data into the lake. And then, of course, making sure that the people who operate that data lake themselves are following the appropriate rules. So in terms of the journey that organizations go through, they start off with the concept of having a data lake. And it sounds quite nice. You sit there, you have this beautiful lake, you can sit on the edge of the jetty, and you can wonder all the stuff that I can get out of that lake. But of course, as soon as you dip your feet into the water, you realize that this is a complete mess. I need to do something a bit more sophisticated than just having a big dump. So in terms of the metaphor, if you like, the next sort of view is to have something what I would call like a data wharf. And the idea here is that you start to congregate data into boxes that contain stuff. So in a wharf, of course, like this here, even though it's still a complex environment, you know that if I went to that particular container there and there's a manifest of that container, I know what's inside of it. It may not then interact with that white box over here or this one over here, but at least I've got a bit more knowledge about what's inside those larger boxes. So the wharf gives me a bit more sort of a bit more of a view of the world. And then the last sort of view you want to get at is what I call the data marina, where everything is perfectly lined up. It's all nicely laid out. It's all high value. These are all multi-million dollar vessels, for example. So you've got a lot more value in your data assets, worth more than just a container sitting on a wharf. So we want to be able to sort of have this vision of as we mature our lake through these different stages, we want to get to the point where I end up with a very mature marina of data, so that I can definitely understand what the capabilities are of each of these particular vessels in this case, and I can understand the quality of them as well, and the lineage of where they come from, how they got there. So that's my little metaphor, if you like, of the journey from lake to marina. So in terms of how we're going to get to this point here, we need to go through the process of working out how we're going to get to these more compartmentized data in here, and then work on how we get to the more valued data at the end as well. So how do we do that? So in terms of another sort of more enhanced maturity framework, as I've showed before, so this is a bit more of a view of that same original framework, where We've still got to go through this process of adding value as we go through these transformations, and we're going to add in a lot more of knowledge about the organization at the top there, about standard data dictionary, standard reference data, standard models, standard terminology, standard models, standard algorithms and machine learning. And we're going to go through some transformation process as we start off with sort of like our raw data down this end here, and adding through these sort of rules engines, if you like, going down here to add more value. So the concept is that as we go through this process, we add more value, add, say, reference data to our data lake entities, refer it to data dictionary, at least have common map it to common terminology, for example, in our data lake. Then we could add more business models in there, reference models to follow for the organization. We can add more sophisticated terminology. So in the case of healthcare, that we'll be using, say, for example, that SNOMED ontology I talked about before with a 1 million entities in it. And then finally, of course, we could then start using things like, you know, AI, machine learning, to get a much more comprehensive outcome. So each of those basically perform some sort of optimized transformation. And it doesn't mean you do all of them. It means that in terms of maturity, you may just get to this stage here and you say, great, I've matured my data. I now have consistent reference data and data dictionaries, data dictionary elements. I'm using all those. At least all my data elements come from the same sort of entities. So that will be sort of like mature level number two for you. Then number three, number four, number five, depending on how far you want to go up that value tree. And that enables us to say, well, at some points along here, we can say that this collection here, for example, of data that's gone through these transformations and is fitting a particular business model, for example, would be what we would end up calling a particular hub of data that follows a particular business model. So the other thing about all that is that those top level sort of, if you like, inputs into the data lake need stewardship, which is another which is governance in essence. So how you go through that uplift, if you like, of your data through this process requires a governance process to make sure that all of these are actually adding value to your organization as you go through these optimized transformations. So what you end up really at the end of the day is the scenario where, like in the original framework, we have the sources, we have our data lake. We end up with these data hubs, if you like, these more focused data hubs that enable us to focus on the core business entities in our organization, which still then follow through down track to our data consumption layer, our AI and analytics. So in terms of, for example, in that previous example where I talked about the KPI for blood products in healthcare, you can imagine that one of these would be all the information about blood products that we have in our organization. This one could be all about patients. This could all be about the healthcare providers or however the business is actually broken up into. So those hubs then become the collection point for that type of data and that type of information. And it's gone through that previous process I showed you to make sure that the quality of the data in here is actually quite high value. Then, of course, when I have my BI tool over here, it'll interact directly with this particular hub about blood products. And that's where it gets all of its ability to do the dashboard, for example, particularly for that particular KPI. So the idea behind the data hub strategy is that you gives you a sort of a better way to focus your governance as well as your strategy. So we can then start to break up the data, the huge data lake, into smaller chunks of information and business focuses. So that gives us ability to provide more specific governance rules over that. So it may be that the blood products in this example is something that has less requirements in, say, for example, the patient hub, because the patient data, of course, would be more stringently look at. The blood products, for example, it doesn't contain any patient information, it just contains about the levels of product you have in that space, so it's less likely that you need heavy governance over it. So by breaking it up, you can then, if you like, have a more easier governance rules. So basically, that data hub strategy enables you to sort of mediate the most important data that your organization has. And of course, that data hub will be just one of the hubs in your enterprise network. So your data hub will be one of many that you have available to you. And then you can have quite clear relationships between the data hubs as well. So they won't be isolated pieces of information, because there'll still be links to the other data that it collects. So there will be still some relationships between the hubs themselves. Right, and then of course that last bit is really about operationally how you can actually make that available across particularly in the cloud environment, because the hubs can grow in size and shape quite rapidly, and you can make that available quite quickly in a cloud environment. So as an example, the health data platform. So this is what we did in healthcare. One example of our data sort of strategy is over this far end over here. We had all the different sources of information. We had sort of enterprise sources, which were sort of more statewide, and local sources, which are more hospitals specific. And they would be, the data from them would come through our integration engine. This is a IP integration platform, both these two integration platforms here, including external data. And these here are actually standards. HL7, FHIR and DICOM are standards used in the healthcare sector. The idea is that the data coming from these sources would actually be transformed into the appropriate international standards. So these would then transfer that into integration platform. So it did left the operational systems alone, of course, and that then went into our centralized, if you like, data store. In this case, it was just one. This is just an example of one particular data hub. And this was more focused around the patient. So everything about a particular patient from all of these sources would come through here, get mapped into these standards, go into our, for those interested, it was a NoSQL database, because we have relational and a lot of structured data, not just as well as, so for example, FHIR here was a XML stuff, and that's HL7 is XML. DICOM is, it's a funny format for images. So that went into our centralized sort of hub of patient information in there. And then we could actually put in terminology reference data as part of the integration. So if they're using different terminologies, we can use that from our common set. So that became our canonical record, which is our master record for patient information. Because before that, if you didn't do that, patient data was in each of all of these repositories. So if you want to find out, tell me about patient X, you'd have to go to and query every single one of these repositories to find out about patient X. Whereas this enabled us to say, here's one particular repository, and we had some common services there, but that was more to make it more consumable. We can then plug in particular apps to say, I now have all the data about an individual patient here, all of their encounters with the healthcare system, and all of their results were available in one particular, hub, a patient hub. So that's one of the directions we went in the healthcare scenario. And the industry themselves, so this wasn't just sort of like sort of theoretical work. The industry in this space also were sort of following the same idea. So they're all following the basic idea of following open standards. So the data was available through this particular standard called FHIR. It's a funny name, but it's a standard that is used in healthcare. And they had, you can see here, a unified data repository in here. It had all the different repositories. And they unified all through and normalized it through that particular process as well. So that's from a vendor, same for another vendor, the same idea. So they had their data spaces, they called them here. So they started creating hubs, if you like, from the raw data stores coming through and being processed, and then made available, you know, with open APIs, with standards like FHIR. They had all the terminology services down the bottom here for like common terminology, etc. And then the last one is another company, MarkLogic, the same idea. They had the idea of this curated data, which is their idea of what a data hub was as well. So the industry is also definitely pushing in that space as well. So, along that same theme, the Gartner, well, everyone loves Gartner, the research organization that does a lot of industry analysis. Recently, they put out their top 10 trends. So I replicated here with due attribution to Gartner, and there's 10 things that they've come up with, and in particular the ones I wanted just to focus on were these two: the data fabric and the graph. You know, the rest that you can read about. All these augmented ones really mean this to deal with bringing machine learning into those areas: analytics, data management. Everyone's favourite, blockchain's always in there. And this is a good one, actually, explainable AI, which is going to be probably a big new requirement in the future to actually explain what an AI algorithm actually does instead of being a black box. But I want to just touch on those two, data fabric and graph. So they are two, particularly data fabric. I'm not sure if you've heard of that term now. This is sort of becoming a bit of a new buzzword in the industry. And the graph is going to lead me into the world of semantics. But when you look at data fabric and you look at what it actually is, and here's an example I found of someone defining what the data fabric is. This is from a LinkedIn page, and this is the data fabric, all that stuff you can see there, right? So basically it's everything that we want to do in our data architecture. So it's got our metadata management over there, it's got our data integration in there, it's got our data governance in there, it's got data quality, it's got augmented data management, you know, which is one of the features of the other trend as well, a bit of AI thrown in there as well. And you can see down here we have the concept of data hubs. Data hub, data hub, data hub, data hub, data hubs all appearing there everywhere. So in essence, really what that is your, I suppose another way of looking at that is what we would typically call is, that's our data architecture. So the data fabric is a fancy word to saying here is how we're going to architect our system in terms of all the capabilities we need to create our data hubs that we want to provide. So, you know, starting from our data lake up here, to get down to our data lake, it goes through all these services in here to get to our data hub. So that's what the data fabric is. It's really just reiterating the requirement to have a strong data architecture and view of the world and making sure you have those capabilities in your organization. The other one was graph. So graph is an interesting way of looking at the world, and the idea is that with graph, well, I suppose more specifically graph databases or graph views of the world, the idea is that you can explore the data more in a relation to how we think. So if you're familiar with SQL databases or relational databases, they are particularly designed for storing a particular business process or business view in a repository. The graph view of the world is to highlight the relationships primarily between concepts, and that helps to expose those relationships and makes them more transparent. It does. It's really good at things for doing things like looking at complex networks, so investigating a complex network of links between entities. So obviously a graph model, if you like, will enable us to store that, investigate that, and more specifically scale that as well. So relational databases are very poor at doing complex network diagrams, a complex traversal. To actually do a traversal is quite costly, whereas a graph repository can do that quite easily, quite quickly, and can scale up to literally the billions of nodes. And the last bit about graph model is that it basically tries to provide a more of a human comprehensible view of connected ontologies or ontologies there, meaning more vocabularies and concepts and terms, and linking that diverse set of data. So it's not specific to particular types of data, so any data can be linked. So very good at linking up heterogeneous data sets. So again, is that used in industry? Yes, it is. Thomson Reuters, the financial industry organisation, they use the graph model to particularly highlight. This is a good example from one of their marketing materials, but also, if you remember, a lot of the I think a year ago or maybe a couple of years ago, when they found a lot of offshore money laundering, for example, where they tried to find out who owned what companies and all these shell companies all over the world, they used a graph model to establish the organizations and how they're related in terms of who owns it, who works at organization, who they represent, and that graph model enabled them to find out more quickly in more detail the true owners of these organizations that were performing money laundering in different islands around the world. So that's where it played a lot of role, because you can expose that quite easily in the graph model. Uber, our friends Uber, use a graph model. You can imagine the amount of trips that occurs every second around the world. So that's represented as a graph model. So from the consumer's point of view, requesting trips, the actual trip going through, the points in the trip that you want to mark out as well, they're all part of a graph model that they use in a very simple way, but very powerful way in the underlying data repository. So the graph is interesting because it links into a different way of looking at data, and that is the semantic way of the world. So semantics is really, it relies on having a graph model, because the semantic web relies on the fact that we want to be able to store data in a very simplistic way. But that simplistic way enables a lot of power in terms of representing the relationships between them. So what does semantics mean, particularly in our industry? Because semantics, ironically, is a word that is misinterpreted quite wildly across the industry. So, for example, when I look at the semantic layer, and you go to Wikipedia and you search semantic layer, because I found the word semantic layer was used in one of the cloud architectures I found, and I wanted to understand what they were trying to use it for, and one of the people I spoke to said, well, the semantic layer is very simple. When I say A380, what I mean is it's an Airbus A380. I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. So what does that mean? Are you just sort of taking a string and giving me another string back? Is that what semantic layer is? You're just doing a transformation? So when you delve into what does that mean to have a semantic layer, it actually becomes more imperative that we understand what we're trying to say. So if you spoke to someone from the knowledge representation reasoning world or the semantic web world, they'll have a completely different view of what semantics really means. So here's my rough guide to semantics. So what this means is that, there's six things there. So types, properties, sameness, uniqueness, graph model, of course, and reasoning. So what I mean by types is that in that previous example, if I said A380, what I want to be able to say in a semantic world or a semantic model or a semantic system or a semantic layer, whatever you want to call it, is I want to know, is A380 an aircraft? That's what I really want to know from a type perspective. I don't want to know A380 is a string, or A380 is another string called A380, Airbus A380. I want to know that it's an aircraft. So that's important to me in the semantic point of view, that I know what its type is. The other one is properties about things are first class. And what I mean by first class, I mean is they are the same level as the entity itself. So if you're familiar with, for example, in some of you may be familiar with like UML, in UML modeling, the class is actually first class and all the attributes are second class, they're subordinate to it. Whereas in a semantic system, the properties should be first class. The reason we want to do that is we want to ask questions like, how is the A380 related to an A340? How is an A380 related to Cathay Pacific? So this question here is what I'm trying to get out of the system. What's this relationship between these entities? Sameness is another criteria. So, for example, is the A380 the same as the A380neo? I want to be able to ask that question to a semantic system. The answer is no, because the A380neo is a longer version of the A380, which they never actually made in production, but they plan to do one. But that's the sort of thing I want to know. Is it the same? Because it could be the same. It could be just another term for it, but I want to know if it's the same thing. Is it unique? So the A380, which with the ID 45432, whatever it is, whatever unique ID it is, I want to be able to say that is uniquely identifiable and it is one of these particular entities of that particular type. The other sort of aspect is what I mentioned before is it has to be represented as triples, so it's got to fit the graph model. The graph model is very simple node, property, and value, or the triples that we are familiar with in semantic web world. And the last one, which is probably the big one, the harder one to do, but really important because that's why you do it, is the reasoning, or sometimes called the inferencing or inferring data. So that's where the system, the semantic system, enables you to come up with new additional rules or facts about what you already know, and based on a very comprehensive modelling regime. So for example, if you flew from Brisbane to Hong Kong, you can infer, without having to state it at all, you can infer that you traveled by aircraft. Right? I didn't state that at all in the original statement, right? So all you say is you flew from Brisbane to Hong Kong, but you're inferring that because of that you traveled by an aircraft. Because these statements here, like, you understand what flew means, because that's a particular property between two entities, i.e. B&E and Hong Kong, which are two cities, or in fact two airports more specifically. So you can do things like simple reasoning in that respect, and that can get more and more complex. But that's the capability that needs to be exhibited for a semantic system. So when you talk about semantic systems, that's the sort of features that you should be trying to look for to be supported. So in the real world that we talk about, so there are definite solutions to that semantic world, and they then also become semantic hubs, just the same as I talked about the data hub before, which could be relational data hubs. You can have the same data hub, but it's a semantic hub, and it gives you that extra ability of all those other features I just talked about in the previous screen. So here is the offering, if you like, although I don't sell this software or represent those two companies, Microsoft Azure and Amazon AWS. The Azure and Microsoft have part of their cloud platform, they have the Cosmos DB database, and that's a graph database. So you can get all your data that before, like a data lake, if you like, you can dump it into the Cosmos DB. And in that process, you'll be creating triples all the data in there. And that's a process that's managed by that particular repository. And then once the data is in there, then you can have all the different systems and services to interrogate it as you would in any other lake or data hub. And the same thing for Amazon. If you went to Amazon, they've got Amazon Neptune. And that's a high-performance graph engine as well. And it supports a lot of the standards, more specifically RDF and Sparkle, the ones who are from my class who understand that's going to be something important to query that repository as well. So it's not like... So those actually real operational commercial services that you can get right now, right today, from the big vendors. Okay, and... Okay, on schedule. So to wrap up, I think the concept that I've been trying to present today is that the data lake itself is a maturing platform, and it provides a lot of the capabilities that any enterprise requires. But as a maturing platform, you have to be aware that things need to be updated over time, and as new technologies and services are available, you should be able to incorporate them into your data lake premises. So the data hub is probably one of the ones that provide a focus on business requirements, so that if we support data hubs, you end up with more tailored and outcomes for your organization. And to work, it doesn't mean that everything in your data lake becomes a data hub, then becomes a semantic hub. You have to look at and prioritize the right business cases that can show the benefit of, for example, semantic hubs. And that will be ones that require and need a lot of exposure of relationships between data. So if it's just data like sales data, and all you're interested in how many widgets were sold last month, then stick with your relational database. But if you want to know the relationships between selling the products and who bought it, for example, when did they buy it, and what other external factors influence their purchase, then that's sort of the use case that you want to investigate through potentially a semantic hub. But underlying all that is, for example, your enterprise information architecture, that needs to be able to be scalable so that over time it can change and migrate. And of course, the big vendors in this space will provide new services as they come, particularly the two I mentioned before. So your platforms that you generate today can evolve as well with those services offered by the big cloud providers. You then have to, of course, use some sort of maturity roadmap for your data fabric, as they call it in quotes, which is basically your enterprise IA, so that you, as you mature and you get to the point where you can actually support things like semantic hubs or even just plain old data hubs, you can then get to realize some of the benefits from that co-location of data into those business-focused areas. Okay, and with that, I will finish with, this is a very nice data hub, if you like. The data lake has got a nice wall around it, very well managed, and hopefully that will be one that can inspire you as well. So happy to answer any comments or questions about any of the topics I've covered this evening.